Evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to all listeners and viewers to this episode of Eurobytes. This is the March 5th, 2026 episode. I'm joined by L. Todd Wood, our host, and Christian, the guy who's hailing in from the UK another time. Not with us today is Fabian, who's on a well-deserved vacation somewhere in the German outskirts. Great to have you two guys with me tonight. And we've got two main topics. The first one's obviously Iran strikes. The older ones listening and watching might remember this parody song, Bomb Iran. Now it's finally happening. And for the other ones, we've got a second topic. This is like what's not being talked about, such as what the BBC says about Russian conspiracies coming up, the Somali welfare scandal that we never talked about on this show. And well, Christian, one last thing that I also want to talk about today is fake refugees coming to the country not being deported at all. Christian, may I lead over to you? I think we've heard an interesting statement from Sir Keir Starmer. Do you mind elaborating?
Yes. But before I start with that, one of my tangents, but it's not too far. I mean, essentially, it's almost an anniversary. Well, it is an anniversary of sorts. By a couple of days, I think, and now 4 years ago, and it's hard to imagine. I remember Todd sending me a message 4 years ago and saying, "Hey, let's have an episode. Let's clarify a couple of things and prevent this stupid war." That was the Russia-Ukraine war, and obviously at that time, I had the worst prediction of all time that it wasn't going to happen because it was so stupid that nobody could possibly do it. But it. Turns out that our elites were that stupid, and obviously, in terms of strategic empathy, the threat looked far more existential from Russia's side than it looked from our side. John Mearsheimer brilliantly explained it. So I think that kind of almost got the whole group together 4 years ago, and now we've got another war, and that lets me segue into Keir Starmer, who. Well, it's the guy of the many U-turns. I mean, there have now been 25 U-turns during his the 2 years he's been prime minister. I mean, being him wanting to yank away the special fuel allowance for the pensioners, him moving like a ton of bricks against the farmers and wanting to take big inheritances on inheriting farms, him essentially, pissing off every single fraction of public life, be it on the left and the right, which is why he's the least popular prime minister since records started. But now, for the first time ever, he said something. He has a somewhat reasonable position, badly wrapped, as everything that wooden man does. And he doesn't want to actually join into bombing Iran. He kind of has all kind of excuses. He's like, well, I mean, if they want to, we're not joining just yet. If they want to give up the nuclear program, that's fine with us. And thereby signaling that regime change is not what he's after, which is interesting enough. And then Nigel Farage, who's recently gotten a competition in the form of Rupert Lowe, a proper right-wing party, whereas Nigel Farage is like the boomer establishment. And Nigel Farage is like, when that was announced that Keir Starmer said, look, they don't have, if they give up their nuclear program, we don't really see a reason to join. And then Nigel Farage is like, well, the regime is still there and they've killed thousands of people, blah, 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 and went into full boomer machinery and regime change rhetoric, which made Keir Starmer look somewhat good. What doesn't make him look terribly good in terms of the defense readiness of the United Kingdom, whether it was Iran itself or probably through its proxies, Hezbollah, its base in Cyprus, sort of in the Mediterranean, probably still 1,000 miles away from Iran, has been hit by a drone. And for the viewers, the Brits have a control about, I think, 5% of the Cyprus territory as a sovereign British outpost, where they've got big military, but big air force bases there, and they've got big signal intelligence bases there, where they kind of listen deep into the Middle East. And that base was hit by a drone, presumably from Hezbollah. And there's still no British ship in sight. Instead, Spain and France have sent a ship to protect Cyprus, which is good of them. But yes, it's crazy days where suddenly Keir Starmer looks reasonable in comparison. And that's pretty much the interesting bit about the UK. Lukas, what has Germany been doing in the meantime?
Nothing. Charles and Matt went to the US earlier this week and had a talk with President Trump. Funny notice, I once encountered President Trump during CPAC 2019, like just 20 yards away or something. And he's like, he's so tall. Guess what? Friedrich Merz even taller. Friedrich Merz, like, to keep it in modern words, Friedrich Merz is like, I'd say half a head higher than Donald Trump is. It was really impressive. Anyway, one of the interesting things is, though, Germany has decided to do nothing. Germany has now sent one Lufthansa A340 airplane with roughly 250 people that can be brought home. I found this to be a very interesting thing. I was browsing through the internet last night, and I saw a friend of mine reposted something from the U.S. Department of State, where it's like, yeah, if you're an American in the region, call us and we get you home tomorrow. And they were like, yeah, we're flying home 10,000 Americans every single day. And Germany's like, yeah, 4 days into this, we brought home roughly 250 people. Keep in mind the distance way shorter going back to Germany. So the government, this is something that you as an American listener and viewer might not realize at this point because it's German domestic policy. The German Conservative Party, the CDU-CSU union, has a huge struggle right now. Bavarian Prime Minister, Bavarian Governor Markus Söder said that he's very disappointed in how the federal government, of which his party is basically part of, is handling all this. And keep in mind that our foreign minister, Mr. Wadefuhl, who I happen to have a picture with from like 2019 due to some talk event that I hosted where I invited him. he's like, yeah, I don't even know which aircraft this is. I only know that it's a Lufthansa thing. And don't ask me about these things. So he's kind of like, he's so uninterested in all these things. If you're a German abroad, you can, like, there are three kinds of people who are now in this region. One of them are people who are like cruise tourists. I feel really sorry for them. I know one of these people who's stuck on the Mein Schiff 5. It's like a German, if you're upper middle class, you go on this ship. And he's like texting us in the office. And he's like, yeah, we don't know how to wash our clothing now at this point because like we ran out of detergent. So the worst things to happen. The other group of people, the second one, are those who really are in the region working there. Like, let's say, keep in mind, Iran has 90 million people, so they still have an economy of their own, and there's some things are exempt from sanctions. So there are some Germans who are like kind of stuck in there, who need to be brought home. And then there's third group of people. it's Germans who moved to Dubai. And I have to say, I don't know whether you've noticed this, but apparently the UAE has forced them to all share certain imagery on Instagram. It's like, it's hilarious. To the younger listeners and viewers, you've seen this. To the older ones, go look it up. Ask your kids, ask your grandkids, do whatever. But you need to see this. It's, aren't you scared of living in Dubai? And then comes this, no, because I know who protects us. And I don't know if you see some, like, unidentifiable people who are, like, wearing this Arabian outfit. And obviously, they don't know what they do. They were playing Skyfall when they were like attacking the Burj Al Arab. It's like, if it wasn't real, you wouldn't believe it. The one thing that I want to add though is German politics, they have no defined opinion. AfD has shared a post on X where they were like, we call all parties to use restraint in this and don't destroy civil infrastructure. Germany is not interested in destabilizing this region. And guess what? AFD out of nowhere gets like a huge backlash from right-wing influencers who are like, oh, is this now the new Sarah Wagenknecht party? Is this the left, or has the horseshoe theory finally come to terms? I think it's kind of an odd thing. From German perspective, this war is a bad thing. Germany has been very supportive of the, like, also the German opinion, the public opinion, has been very supportive of the military strike, which happened roughly 8 or 9 months ago, when the Americans and the Israeli air forces bombed the, these nuclear, enrichment.
Yeah, nuclear plans. Research.
Yeah, these enrichment. Yeah. And so German media increasingly asks, if you did this half a year ago, 9 months ago, how comes that out of nowhere, Iran's only 2 weeks away from a bomb? So I think this is a thing that we do need to focus on over the coming weeks as well, how this is playing out. People in younger generations don't really buy into this this American support of Israel, I think, and they also don't buy into this German support of Israel anymore. Like, we've seen this a lot with evangelicals who think that this is the Holy Land, and, you know, at one point they will all go to heaven and the others won't. For Germany, Israel's safety has been part of the raison d'être of Germany, and also due to the fact that a lot of Germans are migrants nowadays, and there's also migrant offspring. Keep in mind, the second generation tends to be more radical than the first one. They're not interested in this anymore. And also for young Germans, they're like, the economy is screwed. Germany's supporting Israel with submarines, which are like paid for by the German government, as we know, which they always covered under this umbrella of, yeah, you know, this Germany's historic
responsibility, they call it nowadays.
Really would be the right term. And now, like, years later, German media are saying it's an American-Israeli attack on Iran, and German, like, what do you call it? German legal researchers focusing on international law are being quoted as, this is not covered by international law. And also keep in mind that there is like an arrest warrant for Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu by the ICJ, which the Americans are not part of. So all good on this side. But Germany is part of it. And Friedrich Merz said that if Mr. Netanyahu were to enter Germany, he would do everything not to enforce this warrant, which makes this all a domestic issue, because Friedrich Merz also needs to keep in mind that while CDU is the most popular party in Germany, according to polls right now, they somehow stepped 5 points ahead of AfD recently. They're like 28%, and AfD is at 23%. So we're not talking incredible popularity of the CDU party. We're talking about a relative majority, which, in case they don't want to work with AfD, which we will come to later in this episode by chance, they do need to work with some center-left to left-wing parties. I hope they don't. I hope they work with AfD. But if they choose to maintain the path they've taken in the past, they need to come to terms with the fact that foreign policy, such as this unanimous and like completely steadfast support of Israel is something that Germany will have to handle, simply because the German populace isn't the same as it used to be anymore.
Probably that's with that that's being said, Todd's input. Yeah,
I was going to say that's a big point, because what is a German now, right? I mean, is it a Syrian? Is it they have a completely different view.
At the same time, let me just add this.
Yeah.
People who have foreign parents, obviously they grow up in this Islamic background, you know, where America is the great devil, the great Satan, yeah, and Israel the little Satan. But also for young Germans, it's like the country's infrastructure is breaking apart. As you, like, you could watch Germany break apart in real time. At the same time, Germany's paying to third countries, so it's all something from Germany.
It's happening here. By the way, you said Fabian was in the Bavarian forest. I had this mental picture of him in his lederhosen climbing a mountain or something. We need a picture.
Something out of Sound of Music. That's the one that I was
thinking. So, but two things happened this week. One, IFD, the courts ruled in their favor, right? I mean, that was huge.
Yes. So, good of the FAZ, the Frankfurter Allgemeine, on how German parties need to come to terms with the fact that the Brandmauer, the firewall against the right-wing AfD, needs to go. Even the centrist FAZ says this nowadays. I told my wife, I was like super giddy. I was like, Valerie, listen up. You know what they say. It needs to go.
The other thing that happened I thought was humorous is that the Syrian government said, we don't want all those Syrian refugees back from Germany because it might harm our society.
They're too radical. Yes, I mean you can barely make that up. There's so much to be said about that. Where the country, no, you can't do that to us. We're underdeveloped, and these people are terrible. I'm like, yeah. And Todd, maybe just a couple of thoughts from your side. I mean, with your military background. And obviously, it's a bit of a black box at the moment, or any administration at a time of war is a bit of a black box and all. But what, from what you can observe, what are your initial thoughts a couple of days into this campaign?
Well, as you know, I got put on the Pentagon press corps, so I've been spending a lot of time in D.C., going to the briefings and everything, and traveling to Fort Bragg and elsewhere. But
congrats.
I think the military is executing because they're good at that. So that's happening. And I will say there's a lot of doom and gloom out there. And I think I'm trying to look at this from a rational, responsible way. I mean, we're here, right? The war's happened. No matter what you thought about, we're in a war. And it's and if we lose this, it's going to be really bad for my kids and their future. So whether that be, you know, just loss of American power, prestige, military might, money. So I want a good outcome for the West in this, whether that means, you know, a victory, I don't know, but I want it to be where American power is, you know, remains. And so that's a concern of mine, no matter what anybody thinks of the war. The military's executing. I think the best thing for Trump to do at this point would be a handoff to indigenous forces, whether that be the resistance, the Iranian resistance, the Kurds, whoever it's going to be, because we don't have the force structure to go in there and force a regime change, and it's up to them. So we've killed the leader. Whether you agree with that or not, we've done it. So let's look at where we are. We've killed the leader. You've degraded their air defenses completely. You've destroyed their navy. You're destroying the missile production facilities, which is the big one. And if you can prevent them for, you know, 5, 10, 20 years from developing some kind of weapon, then okay, declare victory and go home. I think that's what Trump may do. I hope that's the path. I hope we don't get in some kind of long-term thing. That's just my rational perspective at this point, because we are where we are, and we're past the point of saying we don't want to do this. So that's not my thoughts.
It is interesting. I mean, I guess I would be remiss, and Lucas has hinted at them, obviously, within the European right, things are shifting as in the American right, and I think it's a generational issue where, I mean, had you asked me about the same issue as early as maybe a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, I mean, essentially, it would have been, I would have defended Israel steadfastly and said, look, I mean, actually, when I lived in Vienna not that long ago, I mean, I got into a shouting match or kept heckling demonstrations of Palestinian protesters again, like right after October 7th, because, well, I'm like, well, the, all of you are here. If you don't like it, or you've got, you think you've got any contribution to make, go home, whatever. But you had like thousands next to the famous Karl's Church in the middle of Vienna demonstrating against Israel. And you had all the kind of, you know, lefties with a Palestinian scar for being on that line. And so I'm like, no, nothing to do with these people. I mean, steadfastly pro-Israel. And that's where I think also most of the right was. I mean, I think it's beginning to pivot in the sense that increasingly we are like, well, I mean, your foreign minister said something interesting. It's like, we only got involved because otherwise the Israelis would have done it by themselves. And I mean, increasingly the
he said worse than that. He said the Israelis did it, so we had to support them, essentially. That's what he said.
Something along the lines where we're like, hey, you know, I mean, what is a sovereign country? It is a country that's making its own decisions without any input from the outside. Whereas, you know, in Germany, we are under no illusion. We haven't been sovereign since 45. But with the United States increasing, the debate is, well, who sets American foreign policy and who benefits from this? And I mean, I take your point. You're like, look, I mean, we got to be pragmatic now. Now, the baby's been thrown out with the bathwater, and we got to deal with the situation that we got to deal with. And probably the only thing worse than entering a stupid war unnecessarily is losing it. And that I'm fully on board with that. But I mean, there's still that remains a bit of an issue. Like, wow.
Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
I'm watching my friends gain more and more weight. And then eventually, I got to tell you, this is a little dark, but a bad diet literally killed my whole crew.
Wow.
Diabetes, a stroke. I mean, all kinds of stuff. It's like, you had a stroke? You're not even 50 years old. You guys got to quit eating this stuff. Your body knows what's what. You're not conscious of this. But that's why people will go to the refrigerator and they'll grab this and that and the other and put together this outrageously elaborate combination of foods. Your body's trying to reach balance. Unbeknownst to us, our bodies are always trying to reach homeostasis. You can't eat all of this stuff and expect to live a long time. And one thing led to another, and I went, you know, forget this. We're going to make our own product. So we partnered with one of the world's top three biochemists where nutrition-specific study is concerned. I said, all I want is the best nutritional and immune support product in the world. So we mixed it in yogurt. It's a powder. I got a bag of it here. I keep one on the console all the time, you know, just so I can show people.
Yeah.
And it's a powder. Now, this is not candy. This is hardcore nutrition. And sugar is an enemy. And most people do not know that the reason these bellies are showing up on people all over the place, your body makes fat to store the toxins it can't get rid of. Mm-hmm. So it just puts them over here. But I can tell you this. You take this for 30 days and then lay off of it for 2 or 3 days, and you'll go, good grief, give me some more. Skin, nails, hair growing back. Cut yourself and it heals in half the time.
I mean, from a European point of view, obviously, if you guys get involved in a disaster where American soldiers die, and there are going to be other implications, but in Europe, like last time, the Israelis in cahoots with the Turks, and that's probably an episode for another day, destabilized Syria. In a way that, you know, oh yeah, we have a regime, we toppled the regime and now we're replacing it, and finally it worked. And I mean, we got 1 million refugees out of that just in Germany. Austria, probably 400,000, which, given how much smaller Austria is a big deal. So I mean, at the end, Obama's disastrous intervention, be that Libya, be that Syria, I mean, for us, I mean, tremendous knock-on effects. And that's not even to say about the hundreds and thousands of Arab civilians and many, many Christians there who got butchered. I mean, for us, it's quite a big, more of a bigger deal. And if we saw like Israel very clearly influencing US policy in a way like, haha, we've now taken out the three countries that were dangerous with us. Iraq is, well, no longer a factor as a country. Syria is off the table. It's not really a country anymore. It doesn't have any air force and stuff like that. And we've got Mad Max kind of scenarios with guys in pickup trucks controlling the whole bit and butchering Alawites and Christians at will. And now the next country, I mean, if they succeed splintering Iran, and that's a much bigger deal because obviously Iran is a much more united culture than Syria, the artificial state that it was, than Iraq ever was. I mean, they've got a deep bench in terms of a culture and they're big. So for us, it's like, who really benefits here? Certainly not Europe once more, as with the Ukraine war, and probably not the United States either.
That's a whole nother show.
going down that rabbit hole.
Podcast. Yeah. So again, I guess I'm there's a lot of gloom and doom here in the U.S. I'm trying to like provide some, I guess, leadership on how to get us to a good spot out of this, because we're in a situation, as they say. So we got to deal with it.
Thank you. We can agree with that. Lucas, unless you want to chime in on that topic, or we'll just dive into, which is tangentially related to all of it, what is not being talked about in the meantime?
Peter, it's, I'd stick with Todd in this one. There's so many things to talk about. And this, as you call it, rabbit hole, is so deep. We can't really leave it once we get into it. So let's focus on things that I mentioned that are not being talked about. Let's start with the fake refugees, Christian.
Well, so, I mean, as you might have heard, Germany's got its fair share of quote-unquote refugees who always, I remember on Facebook, there was, during the height of the refugee crisis, 2015, and there was a picture of the left-wing football club St. Pauli. Yes, the St. Pauli district of Hamburg has its own football or soccer club, and it had a big sign of refugees welcome here. And there was some sort of American Karen who said, oh, I think this is so great and Europe's so smart doing all of this. And I kind of pushed back and she said, but desperate people are going to do desperate things. And our point was like, at the time and it remains now, well, if they're so desperate, why is it all men in a certain age group? And by the way, why do they cross half a dozen safe countries, if not more? And interesting enough, and the United States will have observed that tendency, whenever we intervene in a place to solve a crisis, we tend to get a lot of refugees from that place. That was the same with the United States, with Vietnam, where you got people with like Star Wars names, like the Hmong and the whatnot. And then obviously Iraq, Somalia, you name it. And now we've got lots of Afghans in Germany. Actually, a couple of Afghans, a couple of hundred of them now are suing Germany because we promised them that we will resettle them. And then we didn't. And they're now suing us. But I think what Lucas is hinting at, and obviously all European governments are spinning their wheel now that the far right is in ascendance. And they're like, just to show that they're doing stuff, they're actually deporting people. And I think, Lucas, we had a plane, since you mentioned the German government, flying out people to Germany, German actual refugees from the Middle East, actual Germans. But now how many?
Half the people who went to Dubai are like foreigners themselves who just happen to have a German passport. And guess what? Thanks to what Todd mentioned, this the fact that AfD is actually not a right-wing extremist party, despite the fact that they think remigration is a thing, you're now somewhat allowed to talk about this. Being German can also have something to do with ethnicity. Like, it's totally fine to say that you look like an Arab, you live in Dubai, why do you have a German passport? Why do you call on the German authorities to be brought back home? And That's all I want to say in this, except for one thing. Keep in mind, most Germans who lived there permanently only did so because they wanted to evade taxes. Now, does Germany have an incredibly high tax rate? Yes. Should you opt for a country that has like a 0% income tax in exchange for you to sign a waiver of your fundamental rights? No, that should not be the choice. If I were the German government, I would bring back these tourists who I mentioned who are stuck on, like, these 60-plus people who are, like, stuck on some cruise ship. And I would also bring home the people who are, like, Germans who do business there. But I wouldn't bring back any Instagram models and people who thought, oh, yeah, Germany has a punitively high tax rate. Maybe I should just move abroad after I made a fortune with YouTube or something, you know? Have these, like, if this airplane were not to reach Germany, but instead were to reach Cyprus only, just keep them there.
Let me ask you, Germany has a very, I've come to understand, a very liberal and open educational system. You have, people can go there, and as long as they are trying to study German, they can essentially stay there and study for a decade or two. And
yeah, yeah.
Just stay.
Yeah, universities for free. Yeah, they can.
It's wild.
Yeah,
it is wild. And I mean, interesting enough, like one of the more recent car attackers was a Saudi doctor who came in Germany to either complete his residency or finish his studies, and then he asked for refugee status towards the end, and I mean, yeah, very often you find that is a way to stay in the country. And then it's not infrequent that they even then suddenly are entitled to some sort of student loans that only Germans should be entitled to. It's weird. It's crazy. Yeah, yeah, you're correct,
Tom. Yeah, I got to add one thing to this. Germany has, at this point, finally reached a point. They've reached an understanding where they're like, oh, we need migration to keep this country going. Like, no, you don't. But they're like, yeah, where do we get the migrants from? Guess what? We're now trying to bring Indians into Germany.
Sure,
of course. For the past years, German universities have become diploma mills for Indians because it's kind of like with an F or J1 visa in the US, you know, when you graduate school, you have like 1 year grace period to actually find a job and convert your visa into an H1B or something. This is what's happening in Germany right now. People like Indians move to Germany, they get visas, they earn the money by working for like food delivery services. I know this because my wife's office was next to one of these places where they snuck one of these universities in. And at times when I was visiting her back in the day, years ago when we weren't married and didn't have a kid, I was visiting her there. It's like at times you had these Indians walking across the hallway. No one was greeting. I was like, listen, what's going on here? And she was like, oh, yeah, some kind of university where you can do your studies without being there in presence. You know, you order the books, you do the exams, and you get a German degree. You get like a ton of Indians. And it's more and more. This university moved now, I realized, when I was driving to the city because they need a bigger campus for the Indians who are attending. It's incredible. Let me just give you a number. There used to be like 50,000 Indians coming to Germany every year. Now, out of this point, from 2010, there were like 48,000 Indians in Germany. 2020, it was like, it was 150,000. 2023, it was 240,000. The number goes up like this. Seriously, I kid you not.
And interesting enough, Todd, I mean, so it seems to
in Germany.
It is an interesting bit, Todd. And then let's quickly pause that. We're not actually straying from the topic. So it seems to that European elites find ever more ways to get non-Europeans into the system. So they now have understood if we let in everybody who just walks over the border, they just commit too much crime and their cultural issues. And the far right is an ascendant, quote unquote. So now they're doing the whole thing, well, we've got a talent shortage and we've got a skills gap. And then, interestingly enough, they conclude a free trade agreement with India. And it seems to be whenever India concludes a free trade agreement, it doesn't matter with whom, they staple onto it, oh, by the way, you need to take also a lot of Indians. And then it's always, it was the same with the UK recently. It's the same with Germany. It's the same with a couple of other countries. But then they always say, whoa, back off. It goes by the way. I mean, even Europeans who want to go to India are totally free to do it. So it's like mutually beneficial. And it's really like once our elites plucked the hole through, you know, let in all the crisis, quote unquote, refugees, they then do the legal route with all the Indians. Yeah. But I mean, I'm not telling you anything new. In the United States, you've got the same issue.
So. Well, hopefully we're getting to a point where, I don't know if it's too late, but for Europe, but hopefully, you know, European Christian culture will somehow find a way to survive. So that's really what I've been focused on.
Absolutely. Probably just on the final bit. So obviously Lucas mentioned refugees because obviously we deported 20 Afghans, but at the same time, we still have 400,000 in the country. And that's sort of the pseudo activity that our government is doing, but probably just a couple of whistle stop tour of things that weren't talked about. Now that there's Iran and the Iran crisis fills the airwaves, we had obviously a high-ranking British politician who's been with us since Tony Blair ascended into power, Mr. Peter Mandelson, ambassador to the United States, turns out really good buddies with Epstein. And so far, nobody in the UK, well, our prime minister made him ambassador to the United States even when the Epstein allegations were known. So that is an interesting bit. And on top of that, that man had been fired 3 times for accepting too many favors under Blair and Brown. And so it sometimes makes you wonder, like, why a guy who'd been kicked out 3 times then becomes the ambassador in spite of being known to Epstein. So again, we are in the, and Todd, you're correct, we could make dozens of episodes. What is it about certain people that make them pop up in certain elite positions?
I have a question. Who's Mr. Epstein? Is that the guy who took the pictures that Bill Clinton, President Clinton, was like gleefully watching? Have you seen this video where Bill Clinton is being presented these pictures from like the pool, and
yes,
his legal counsel, she's like taking stuff and he's taking it back. He's like going through old memories. He's like, oh,
yeah, no, it's pretty bad.
Dear listeners and viewers, I just want to add, back in the day, like Bill Clinton knows how it runs. There's an increasing number of Germans who say that the whole Iran thing is only happening to distract people from what's going on actually with these files. Keep in mind, Bill Clinton had a regional train going out from Belgrade and completely obliterated with, I think, 150 civilians in it, just to make people talk about something different than the blue dress that Monica Lewinsky wore.
Yeah, it's all related. Yeah. By the way, Fabian just sent me a picture on scene, so I thought I'd bring that up. So.
Oh, you grew bald. I think like, in Germany, that there's a saying, they say, die fressen die Haare, they eat the hair off your head. It must be a really expensive place where you went to.
But anyway, that's all I got.
I think, Lucas, we can wrap it up here. Probably a couple of things that, in terms of watch this space, there are a couple of very influential state elections in Germany this year. And that remains super exciting. Probably final thought of yours, and then we're going to wrap up this episode today.
That is true. This Sunday, there's going to be state elections in Baden-Württemberg. Keep in mind, Baden-Württemberg is the southwestern part of Germany. It's like after Bavaria, it's the most, it's the wealthiest state in Germany. It's where your favorite cars come from. It's where the Porsche comes from. It's where Mercedes comes from. Yeah. It's also where the only German tech company, SAP, comes from. It's also where Germany's weirdest soccer club, Hoffenheim, comes from. There's 11 million people, out of which 8 or something can vote. And right now, there's a green and black government in there. The prime minister is Winfried Kretschmann, who's not running again. So who's running for the Green Party is, I think, Cem Özdemir. As you can hear, he's a real German. I like making these jokes, but he's kind of like a really well-integrated German. I think he's eating
pork. Too well-integrated.
I think he's eating pork. He's like such a boring guy. He's super German.
He's a vegetarian. He's a vegetarian. I once met him. Yeah.
He does not have any temperament at all. You know, Mr. Özdemir, you would assume he's like a hot-blooded Turk. No, he's like the most German guy there is. The funny thing about the Green Party in Baden-Württemberg is they have one guy who's the mayor, or used to be the mayor of the city of Tübingen, Boris Palmer, who's like kicked out of the Green Party because he's actually, in green terms, he's a racist. He's a guy who says, Green Party ideas can only work when there's no foreigners, because women's liberation can only happen when you kick all Muslims out of the country, basically. The guy's funny. The guy's got some good points. And Boris Palmer is super popular. And you should go watch an interview with Boris Palmer. This is all I can say. I'm trying to keep it neutral here in terms of politics, and I'm trying, like, you know, years ago we made fun about the federal minister for the interior, Nancy Faeser, who tried to imprison people for actually making comments on the internet. Somewhere in Baden-Württemberg, I think it was like in Heilbronn. I can't really point on the map. I've got a map of Baden-Württemberg here.
Somewhere it's, in the southwest.
1 hour north of Stuttgart. So it's like, it's not where your Porsche comes from, but it's where it's 1 hour north of where your Porsche should come from. Friedrich Merz was visiting the city last fall. And like an elderly, he commented on Facebook, like, you know, it's an old guy. Whenever you read someone commented on Facebook, you know the guy's 60 plus. so he commented, oh, yeah, Pinocchio is visiting us. And Friedrich Merz, I give him credit for this. Friedrich Merz doesn't really care about being insulted online. He never presses for charges because Friedrich Merz isn't whining.
I always thought he looked a bit like Pinocchio, to be fair.
He isn't a freaking little girl. But here comes the funny thing. Out of nowhere, the Baden-Württemberg State Police, they somehow pressed charges against this guy for saying, oh, yeah, Pinocchio is visiting. And it took half a year for the police to actually, for a district attorney to say, no, you can actually call the chancellor Pinocchio. But this tells you a lot about German freedom of speech. Keep in mind, in America, you can say whatever you want. Take Tucker Carlson. He's like, I love this segment where he said, I've been wrong so many times, so I don't want to give a prediction. But if I were to give a prediction, X, Y, Z. In Germany, he couldn't make any prediction. He would have been in jail. He would have been imprisoned 10 times for what he predicted at this point. In Germany, things have become kind of hard. Let's see how this is going to work out in Baden-Württemberg. One last thing I want to add. This used to be or is still one of the wealthiest states in Germany. It's also where Bosch comes from. So they do all the cars. They do all the cars. Yeah, like they do all the components. They do all the electricity. I think, like every German thing. When Americans think of Germany, it's basically Bavaria and Baden-Württemberg. It's for sure not Berlin, unless you're like a raver or something, or unemployed or homeless or I don't know what. But over the past years, Baden-Württemberg's economy has tanked incredibly because the EU doesn't do anything about Chinese car imports to Germany. So Porsche has issues, Mercedes-Benz has issues, all the suppliers have issues because they're supplying German companies, American companies, they're supplying car manufacturers overall, except for the Chinese, because the Chinese have already stolen the technology that the German car OEMs can actually offer. So AFD is actually in polls very close to being the runner-up, or possibly they could even be the strongest party right now. There's you've got the Green Party, the CDU, and AFD somewhere between 23% and 25%. And it's going to be a very interesting election on Sunday. We'll keep you posted next week. I'm going to pass off to Christian. Stay safe and God bless y'all.
Yeah. Okay. Same here. And well, thanks for taking the time. We've obviously busy days for all of us. Todd with his new correspondence duty at the Pentagon, and obviously all the dadding that Lucas and I do these days. So very much looking forward to the next episode. And as we always say, it's we live in interesting days. We blink twice and suddenly something absolutely outrageous happens. I wouldn't exclude suddenly next week seeing Bill Clinton in Tehran for whatever reason.
Well, on that note, Kirill Dmitriev in the Kremlin is posting images of black swans. So...
All right, guys. You know the issue is I somehow like Bill Clinton. I feel so bad for him. I feel bad for him being like still being healthy enough physically to actually go to this hearing, but being unhealthy enough mentally to actually open his mouth.
Take care, guys.
Okay, take care. Yeah, bye.